Welcome to Podsdale, brought to you by the City of Scottsdale. Join us to explore the stories that make our city a world-class community.
I'm Greer Alba with my co-host, Holly Peralta. We're tackling a topic that impacts some of our most vulnerable residents, financial crimes against seniors.
Scams and fraud schemes targeting older adults are on the rise, and scammers are getting more sophisticated. From phone and email scams to identity theft and financial exploitation, seniors can find themselves at risk, and the consequences can be devastating.
Joining us today is Sergeant Joel Lewis from the Scottsdale Police Department's Financial Crimes Unit. Sergeant Lewis has investigated countless fraud cases here in Scottsdale and is here to share real-world insights on how these crimes happen, how to prevent them, and what to do if you or someone you love becomes a victim.
So stay tuned as we uncover the warning signs, learn how law enforcement tackles these cases, and find out how we can all work together to protect our senior community from financial predators. Sergeant, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we start into all of our questions for you, because we have quite a bit, can you share a little bit with our listeners about yourself, how long you've been with the police department? And you had an interesting path into law enforcement, I understand.
It is rather interesting or rather unique. I've been with the Scottsdale Police Department actually 24 years next month, so May of 2001. And I've actually been a sergeant 17 years next month. So it's been quite the ride. And prior to it, and one of the reasons why I am the financial crime sergeant is I was a banker before this. So my background in education is business, and then I was in the financial world. So I'm kind of a nerd with finance and fraud, and I'm sure there's no one else interested in that position. So that's what brought me to be the supervisor of financial crimes unit. This is actually my second stint as the financial crimes unit sergeant. So
okay. Well, I mean, it does seem like an interesting segue to go from banking into becoming a police officer, but with what you're doing, it makes a lot of sense. Has it always been something that's interested you?
You know, it is, probably because I'm a boomer. I'm going to get that straight. You can tell by looking at me. So I grew up watching Adam 12, which is an old black and white police thing, and Starsky and Hutch and Beretta. And so I always wanted to do this, but, you know, life and circumstances took me along the business route, which was wonderful. And then when I had an opportunity to leave the financial world and become a police officer, that's what we went for, and it never looked back.
Okay, so being in the financial crime unit, how prevalent are financial crimes against seniors here in Scottsdale?
It's a lot. The context is that if you think about it and you look at statistics now, 11,000 people a day are turning 65 in the United States. The largest amount of money is leaving, like, retirement things. It's being moved into other retirement vehicles. So we have the biggest amount of money being moved, and we have the largest amount of people getting ready for retirement. So they're thinking about, and me too, what is next? Where should my money go to be safe? What should I be doing? And the scammers know that. And so they're going to specifically target people. And it's pretty easy to find out who is a particular age. It's easy to find because you can get on the Maricopa County Recorder site and you can see when people pay off houses, different things. So Florida and Arizona and Scottsdale specifically is a target. It's a target for our community in that people are trying to get the money from our citizens, but it's also a place where scammers want to be from because it lends an air of credibility.
And in this information age, it's amazing what you can find online. Oh, I never thought about that, but you're right. It's so easy to find some pretty basic information about an individual if you do a little searching.
There's no way to hide online things. Not only the dark web, which none of us are going to be involved with, but just the normal way of gathering data that data brokers buy and sell. It's a commodity. It's available to anyone. That's why you get mailings in your U.S. mail or an email, because that is, it's like a window, a door. And so when they start doing that, when they start sending you emails or U.S. mail or text, it's all available. And it's all an opening for suspects to get to our community.
Okay. I have a funny story. When I first started in this position, I got a text message from someone stating that they were like a city employee, like asking me to go get some gift cards for them. And I had just gotten the position. I'm relatively new to the professional world, and I wanted to make my supervisors be proud of me or make sure that I did my job correctly. So I got the text at like 6:30 at night and I was like, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to go buy these gift cards. And I texted my coworkers. I was like, hey, like, does this happen often? Like, is this something that normally happens? And one of my coworkers was like, no, don't do anything with that.
Good for them.
Do you find people falling for that? Because I mean, I almost fell for it. It's how often do you get calls or people talking about this kind of stuff?
That particular scam, we would see that. Not so prevalent anymore, but we had a big rash of it about a year ago where it seemed like every week we were getting something. It was from people at fast food to hotels to just regular employees. And these, and remember, the victims of these scams are just trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
No one's saying, go buy drugs. Everybody's saying, hey, do this. I'm the vice president or I'm the, you know, hey, right. I want donuts in the morning. Go get, you know,
right.
and grab a gift card. Go take the money and... And they know that you don't have the money maybe in your pocket.
Yeah.
We've even had a hotel staffer break into the safe in the middle of the night because they thought their boss needed that money right then.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And we've had people at fast food places take money out of the register and go buy a Green Dot card and then give it to them because, hey, we're having a big giveaway or whatever. It's amazing. The social engineering of these people is amazing. And they know exactly what to say. People don't have to understand. They have scripts. And they have an objection, and then they have an overcoming objection script. They know exactly what's going to happen. They become masters at the social engineering. So totally believable, even just by a text. That alone there. In fact, one of the things we're trying to do in the Financial Crimes Unit is we're saying, stop the click, stop the loss.
Mm-hmm.
Don't click on the text. Don't click on the email. Don't click on the pop-up. And you generally, because most things come in that way, you're going to stop the loss.
I think what made that seem so authentic in some ways, if I remember correctly, you were addressed by name, and they knew you worked in the city.
Yes, it was a city employee. They identified themselves. I wasn't familiar with the employee, so I did some research, and I recognized that it was a city employee, and they reached out to me on my personal cell, and we had a pretty generic, like, conversation. Like, they were conversing with me like a normal person, and so I genuinely was like, okay, I gotta go get these gift cards.
Yeah, and probably back then, it was a person on the end of that.
Yeah.
Now it's gonna be AI.
Wow.
Because they know exactly what to say. No longer can we tell because of grammar that someone used in an email that maybe it's coming from an out-of-the-country scam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, AI is perfect. AI can examine large data sets. They know exactly how to have an inflection in a voice. They can spoof a video.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter or one of my sons can be calling me, and I don't know. So that becomes even more scary. The fact that they knew that you were a city employee, who knows how they got that, except on our website, everything's there.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome new employee, Greer.
Yeah.
You know, Sergeant Joel Lewis is the Supervisor of Financial Crimes Unit, or Chief LaDuke. Mm-hmm. How easy is it then to scam people through a call and say, hey, you have a warrant for your arrest, Sergeant Joel Lewis, use my voice, use all. And a good citizen is trying to do the right thing. That's the tragedy of this whole thing. They're just trying to do the right thing.
It's funny you bring that up because I actually used to work at Scottsdale City Court and we get calls like that all the time. So what happens on your end after someone calls the court saying that they have a warrant and they don't have a warrant and we direct them to call you?
Greer, just yesterday, someone came into the Scottsdale City Court wanting to pay their warrant because they thought, I must have a warrant. Maybe it was photo radar. They don't know. And it was a scam. Now, luckily, they didn't give the person on the phone the information. So how do they deal with that, or how do we deal with it? The challenge that we have now is that an email doesn't require identification. Voice over internet provider for phone means doesn't require anything. I have 5 undercover Google Voice numbers on my phone right now. They're free. And then I have spoofing software that makes it look like it's coming from the Scottsdale Police Department and says it on there. What else do you need to scam someone? Now, if that happens, how do we go back? I can't identify somebody via email through subpoena or search warrant, or their phone number because it's a free internet and there's virtual private networks that looks like it's come from Britain or India. How do I figure out who's behind the keyboard? I can't. And it's tragic. And we get hundreds and hundreds of cases every month. We have to triage and look at them and go, there's no way I'm going to figure this out. I need to move on to something that's solvable. So that solvability matrix that we have in our minds, we have to keep that in mind.
This sounds incredibly complicated. I think it goes to show, I know we're focusing on seniors today primarily in our conversation, but just from your example, Greer, this can happen to anyone.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I was well-informed, but here I am falling for stuff all the time. So it's clearly it affects seniors, obviously, but it's good for everyone to be aware of and be knowledgeable about for sure.
And with this new technology and some of the things you just mentioned, have you seen an increase in these types of crimes in recent years?
Sure. Yeah. And I've been doing financial crimes for a long time. So where it used to be, even as a fraud detective, when I first started out as a fraud detective, 15, 16 cases, and somebody went through the drive-through of the bank because they stole a check from grandma, whatever it happens to be, it's solvable to, it's totally anonymized. How do I figure that out? And then they put the stolen money gets put into cryptocurrency, which is made to prevent the government's interference, and the exchange is in Libya, and it's hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. How do I get that back? Well, we don't. So until the regulations catch up, until the technology catches up, we're behind the eight ball. There's no way for us to get out in front of any of these things. So that's why you have me here, and that's why we're doing these presentations at the senior centers. We have to get the community involved in it and for them to tell their neighbors, because you know and I know the community is the most powerful part of this. Two members of the community are way more powerful than the entire police department or the city when they band together and try to figure things out. Seniors specifically, because generally they have more money than, you know, I have more money than my kids, certainly my grandkids. That's where the money at. In the 1930s, there was a bank robber called Willie Sutton. He was known to have robbed hundreds of banks. And they asked him, why do you rob banks? His response was, because that's where the money's at. And that's exactly why they target seniors. That's why they target Scottsdale.
What are some of the most common scams or fraud schemes targeting seniors out there right now?
Really, it's the venue of how it gets to the seniors. So my generation, the boomers, we're comfortable using computers now. Maybe not necessarily a laptop or iPad, but we're into email. We understand that. We get pop-ups. It's just a pop-up on your screen, and you click on that, and then it leads you to a link. Maybe it's Goldman Sachs. Maybe it's an invest. Maybe it's, hey, something's wrong with your computer, Microsoft, and then you talk to them. You're thinking you're doing the right thing, and you allow somebody access to your computer, and they've got access to your computer, and they're taking all your money. One click can change your whole life. That's why it's stop the click, stop the loss. People in my generation believe that when the phone rings, the person on the other end is legitimate. It was set up that way. Your dad's screaming at you to pick up the phone before 3 rings. That you trust the government. The phone company used to be run by the government. So think U.S. mail. So we have a paradigm that we automatically trust those things. So to get out of that paradigm is extremely difficult. When we get a call like now, like the warrant scams, that pretend to be the police or the IRS or the DEA, we tend to believe it. We get the pop-up that says, because we're thinking mail kind of, hey, there's something wrong with your computer, you better help. We tend to believe it. So that is the big part of it. The emails, the attachments that now put a keylogger on or any of those things, the pop-ups, the texts, I'm sure you get, besides the one you have.
Yeah.
I get texts every day that are scams.
I get the USPS one a lot,
yes.
That they can't deliver a package and to click on a link. But I've heard enough about that one to know it's
legitimate. And you get it mostly during the holidays, right?
Yes.
Because that's when we're doing it.
Yes.
I'm sure right now the one I'm getting is, hey, did you know, we saw you purchase the Apple iPad for $12.99. If this is, you didn't do this, please click here to verify your information. It's insidious, and they're very good at what they do. But remember, especially with AI now, all they need is your email address or your cell phone, and they're just phishing all day long. They don't have to do anything. It's a machine, it's the infobot that's doing that. And then when they get someone on the line, that's great. Keep them hooked, keep them on the line, convince them. And now if I can talk to you, I'm going to have a much better chance of getting your information, getting your money, getting your data.
And, you know, part of this, as you mentioned, is that a lot of this information, the pop-ups, a text, it looks like it's coming from a trusted source. It could be someone in your organization. It could be your bank. It could be coming from the government or the post office.
Yes, or your doctor. Hey, we noticed this about that. You're not, it's just whatever they can figure out, they're going to make it look like Scottsdale, make it look very important, make it look from the post office exactly, or your bank. And they don't even have to know your bank. I get ones that say, you know, hey, Bank of America. Well, I don't bank at Bank of America, but someone does. So someone's going to click on it. it's done so incessantly. And if they catch you at the wrong time, I've talked to citizens who said, I never would have clicked on that if I didn't just have some medicine at my dentist. And you came home and, you know, you're thinking slowly because they gave you some medicine to help with that. And now you've clicked on something and they're into your computer and they're into your money. So what we talk to the community about, what we talk to our neighborhood groups about is don't trust. I say, don't ever trust a text, a phone, a U.S. mail, a knock at your door. Call us and ask. Because I know our dispatchers, if someone says, oh, should I trust this? They're going to say it's a scam. It's a scam. I promise you it's a scam. And sometimes it's hard to convince them, believe it or not. But it is. It's almost always a scam. So if you get a text from, it says Chase Bank or Wells Fargo, never click on that. Just go to your trusted link that's on your computer or look at the card in your wallet and call that number. Is there something going on? Never use the link that's provided via the email, the text, or the call, because that's the link that they want.
That's good advice.
Yeah, so along the lines of those advice, are there other tools or services like call blockers or financial monitoring that you can recommend to residents?
All of that helps. One easy one is to, if you don't know the person calling, you want to set up your cell phone to anything that's not in your contacts goes right to voicemail. Okay, that eliminates. I never answer my phone unless it's someone I know. Now, what do you do with someone if it's a Scottsdale Police Department and my phone says Scottsdale Police Department? How do you deal with that? If I get a call from one of my kids, I don't put their name in my contact list because that can be spoofed. I have a nickname that no one knows. So if I get a call from one of my kids, it's not going to say Jeff Lewis. The AI knows that. Social media knows that. That's my son. I've got a special name for him so I can look at it and go, I know it's him.
That's a good idea.
So create your own nicknames. Don't put it on social media. So I know, hey, if it's Jeff Lewis and it's coming, I know immediately it's not my son.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do these little kind of simple tricks for that. So sending unknown contacts to voicemail, having special things on there. And to remember, and we talk about this all the time too with the seniors, if you lose your cell phone, you've basically lost your wallet. You've lost your purse. There are ways to get in there. If it's unlocked, you better pray that someone has run over your cell phone instead of being there, because people, for convenience, have things on their cell phone.
Totally.
Another foundational thought is convenience equals risk when it comes to finances. It's very convenient for me to take my mail and put it in the mailbox in front of my house and put up the flag. That's the easiest thing, but do you think it's going to get stolen? Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
High convenience, high risk. It's a lot less convenient for me to take a trip to the post office during their work hours and put that mail on in the wall, mm-hmm. in the slot. Low convenience, low risk. Using the ATM in a gas station versus using the ATM inside the lobby of your bank. The convenience of the gas station is high. The risk is high. That's where we have to stop. Be a little inconvenienced and do these different things. Those little simple tricks really help.
Hmm. Are there any other scams that are particularly new or on the rise right now that people should be aware of?
What it is, it's a variation on an old theme. If you go back and look at history of crime, you know, they had the vacuum cleaner salesman coming to the door full of brushmen or whatever it happens to be. And then it turned into dialing for dollars, Becky. You know, people were trying to come up with different scams and different lottery scams. We're not seeing lottery scams as much. The big one that we're seeing right now is where they've scammed the person enough, scammed our community member enough, and convinced them that something's happening to their money, or that they're working with the FBI, that they've convinced that person to purchase gold, physical gold, have it delivered to their house, and then the criminals pay someone to come pick up the gold from their house, the whole time believing they are helping the FBI to protect their money. And it's been hundreds of thousands of dollars that we've lost because of that our victims have lost. The variation on that is they've had them wrap up cash and put tinfoil around it to prevent the tracking of it. Now, these aren't community members who deal with a mental crisis or have a diminished mental capacity. They're just trying to do the right thing because the criminals have created enough doubt. They want to create doubt. They want to create an emergency, and they want to have an air of authority. So if I can do those things, all those three steps, I can pretty much convince you to do anything. And that's what they've done. So that's the twist on that. Now, sometimes it starts as a pop-up, Sometimes it starts with a phone call, but it ends up that way. So that's the variation in the old theme. That's a lot of money going out. The second one where a lot of money goes out is the same thing, but they're putting it into cryptocurrency, and then it's gone. Both times, they're gone. It's hard to track it because it goes out of the country or it goes to California. Cryptocurrency is no longer in the country. The gold, we think, is ending up in California. But how do you deal with that? And sometimes it is. Both my parents have passed now, but they were in memory care, and they were being scammed in some little ways. And thank God they didn't do anything online. Mm-hmm. They didn't trust it. So it's fairly easy for me to figure out. I thought he was doing the right thing when he was wrapping up cash and hiding in the garage. He had no idea. So people who are having memory care issues or memory issues, for a long time, it's not seen by family members. They're doing things behind the scenes. And then, even more tragically, is they make people feel ashamed because they're a victim. So if I can steal money from you and then you feel ashamed that you fell for it, you're not going to tell anybody. Yet you and I, if we went to lunch and it was terrible lunch, we'd tell everybody. It was terrible. Why don't we share this hard stuff with one another in our community and say, this is terrible. Don't do this. This is how I get ripped off. That's how we stop it. That's the only way to stop it, because I can't investigate them all and I'm certainly not getting the money back.
It's far more common than people think. Like you said, I think there's a sense of pride there, I'm sure, when you've had something like that happen and you don't want to tell others. But knowledge is power, and sharing that information is actually going to probably help someone else.
Absolutely correct. And the application of that knowledge is power. And my sharing with my community, getting out of my community, or their senior groups or the community talking with one another, is the ultimate power. Because all of a sudden you've got the community members sticking together, because no one of us alone is better than all of us together. No single one of us alone is better than all of us together. So when you have the police department partnered with the community, partnered with the city, spreading this message of stop the click, stop the loss, whatever it happens, hear things that are happening, hear some stories, don't panic, but be very concerned, stop. It helps stop that loss. The other part of it is, in technology, amazing. It is amazing. I love talking to my doctor on my phone instead of taking that trip. But we've lost the personal touch. So I know if I have a banking problem, I don't go online. I go in, got to take time off from work, and I'm going to go meet my personal banker because I know it gets done correctly. It'd be really convenient just to do it online. No. I want the personal touch. I want to sit in front of Greer and say, Greer, here's what's going on. And I want you to ask me for two pieces of ID, even though you and I know each other for years, because that's what professionals do. And you're making sure, and you're not trusting me on the phone. That's how we give that back and forth. Always have developed a personal relationship. Always try to be face-to-face. Don't trust the person on the phone. Don't trust anything. And then inconvenience yourself to prevent the loss.
I think one good thing I have seen is there are a lot of businesses and banks who will share this type of information with their customers. They'll tell you things like, we're never going to call you and ask for personal information. We're not going to send you an email and have you click on a link. So I think it's good that they're playing a role in talking about this as well.
They understand the financial institutions out there, the banks, are taking losses. And they tell their clients, we're never going to do this. There are rules and regulations. Like most banks, you've got to notify them if you've had a loss on your checking account or credit card within 60 days. If you are outside the 6 days, you're not getting your money back. And most banks will say little tips like, hey, use your credit card, not a debit card. A debit card is direct access to your cash. And by the way, banks are only required to give $100 back during their investigation. So a credit card is a revolving line of credit. Going back to my banker days. A credit card is a revolving line of credit. You can fight me all day long, and I ain't paying you if you don't agree with it. But to have direct access to my cash, oh, no. I do not carry your debit card with you. Now, I've been married a long time, come up on 40 years. I get an allowance. My wife will give me my debit card every couple of weeks to go take my little lunch money out. I look foolish going into the bank, like dressed like I am, on my lunchtime to get $100 out of the ATM. But it's the safest ATM. It's even safer than the drive-in ATM. It's the safest ATM, and I have cash, so my cash can be used for lunch if I don't trust the vendor or I'm concerned. The debit card then goes back to my wife, who hides it in our house. and the kids know where it's at if they need to grab it. And so that's fine. We've got a system. It works. But the debit card, if you lose it, it's direct access to your cash. They don't have to have your driver's license to get use your debit card. If you get a new credit card, debit card, your signature is not even required on the back of it. What's up with that? Well, technology. And think about it, pointing at all of you, but do you have your credit card on your phone where you can use it or your Apple Watch?
Yeah.
It's super convenient and it's super scary and it's super risky. So if you lost your wallet, if you lost your purse, do people know where you bank? Think you don't have to answer that, but could they go in and then go into your bank and get your money? Because creating a driver's license is easy. I can have one in 12 hours that has all of your information on it with my picture, and they're beautiful. It's not when I was like 16 trying to change the date so I could buy beer with a pen. That doesn't happen anymore. We look at them as experts and go, is this right? So if I can, you lose your purse and I see, oh, you've got a debit card or credit card to a bank, I know exactly where you bank. Guess what? Find my girlfriend, here's your picture, here's the thing, go in there and take all the money out. But if you carry a credit card that has nothing to do with your bank, like an American Express or Discover, they don't know where I bank. So I carry and use a credit card for all my online purchases and lunches, like an American Express. They can't figure it out. No, they might figure it out, but I'm not going to make it easy for them.
Mm-hmm. That makes me have to change my entire way of thinking.
I was going to say.
I pretty much only carry my debit card because I'm trying not to use my credit card
me
kind of thing.
Here but staring at my debit card, I'm like, oh, crap, I got to take that and put it somewhere else.
It's challenging. See, debit cards are super awesome to have. But really, what do you need it for? And people want a budget with a debit card. I had a discussion with the bank president a couple days ago because I did a presentation for his clients. And he said, a lot of our clients only carry the debit card because it's a budget tool. Mm-hmm. It is. But the better budget tool is cash. Cash in an envelope. Cash in your dresser. And you take out what you need today, the $20 for lunch and for 2 days. Have you ever lost your cell phone or your purse or misplaced it?
Yes.
Of course, we all do. That's a gift to criminals. So, and then the other part of losing your wallet and stuff is, what was on that card? You're asking yourself, what is that card connected to? Do you know how hard it is to go through your checking account and figure out what's an automatic debit or a credit or, what's charged to a credit card? Actually, what we do is we have two credit cards. You know, we're old. There's a credit card used just for the automatic payments, and that's never used online or anywhere else except for those automatic payments. Then I have a credit card that I use for my lunch, which my wife will get alerts to because she watches what I eat, right? Which is the other thing is have alerts on all of your stuff. I know today, literally, you saw me messing with my cell phone before. She just gone to Costco. And before that, she was at Safeway because I got text alerts on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you do these little things and partition off losses because we want to prevent the loss. And it really helps. Will you be the victim of identity theft and credit card? Yes, you're going to be the victim of it. All of our stuff is out there. There's no way to stop that. So, Greer, I think you'd mentioned credit monitoring or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful, but I'm such a hypervigilant person about that anyways. It's not doing anything that I already do. Every United States citizen can get 2 credit bureaus a year free from the 3 credit bureau agencies. You can put a freeze or a fraud alert on your credit bureaus or nothing can be opened without your permission. Why aren't we doing that? So no one's going to go buy a house or buy a car in your name unless you unlock it. So it's just these little things that are actually already there. The credit monitoring services are neat, but what I've found is they are usually, I'll get an email from them and I think something's wrong and they're just trying to sell me something.
Mm.
Hey, there was a change to your credit. Yeah, because it's an algorithm, it goes up and down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you log in and they love it when you log in. You're logging in and you're checking that and you realize, oh yeah, who cares? And then they send you something, hey, you want to upgrade? We can't forget it's a business. If all they did was monitor and say, I'm only going to let you know when these things are happening, I'd be up for it. We don't have that right now.
You brought up another interesting point on the cards that I haven't really thought about, but I can't think of the last time anyone has asked to look at my signature on a debit or credit card, and especially nowadays because you can just tap to pay.
Right.
It never leaves your hand.
Right. And actually, tap to pay is a safer method than swiping, because it puts a kind of an electronic wall between that. But they're overcoming tap to pay right now. They just announced Android users are having some challenges with that, and there's some hacking going on. So anything that we come up with, they're going to try to figure it out. They're ahead of some technology. Fraud is literally a business. The dark web has fraud packages that you can purchase that will have, hey, here's your first 100 credit card numbers with fulls, F-U-L-Z, name, date of birth, social security number, mother's maiden name, all of your employment history, and here are credit cards, and here is a reader-writer, everything you need. So they are taking the profit from fraud and putting into fraud business, created a beautiful website. I've done it with the Secret Service, looked at these things and made purchases, and it's just a matter of time. So we have to watch, we have to monitor, we have to be hyper-vigilant about what's going on with our credit and watching all these things. I've been the victim of identity theft many times. Have you? Have you ever had credit cards stolen, mail stolen?
I fell for the toll road text.
Okay.
I had just driven on the toll road. I'm originally from California, so I drove home for Christmas and I came back. And the day after I came back, I got the text saying I had an unpaid toll. So I tapped it and I tried to pay my toll. And then 2 days later, my bank called me and was like, hey, you fell for a scam. Like,
right. And the FBI says that toll road tax is our Chinese hackers.
That's so scary.
It's scary. And how did they get my information? We have to get past that. They have it. Okay. So now that we know the enemy's at the door, how do we prevent that? We stop the click. Stop the loss.
Well, and going back to word of mouth and just conversing with people and getting right. The word out about it, after it happened, my friend got the same text a couple days later, and she's in California, and I was like, hey, I actually just got that text. Like, don't tap
that
on
a girl.
It.
So, exactly. We have to, and they want to prevent us from sharing. The other part of that is we've overshare on social media. I don't have any social media, but that's what AI can go through all that, the huge data set. They're going to know exactly, oh, what a wonderful thing, where you went to high school, who your friends are, who your kids are, what your pet's name was. AI can try to figure out passwords from that. AI can do all those things. So we overshare because we're social creatures and we want to be liked and loved and want to hang. And the bad guys use that. So, you know, have social media, but make like an undercover. Don't put your information in there. Like when they say, sign up for your birthday. I have, you know, an undercover birthday that I always use all the time. Why wouldn't I put my information on there?
Real data.
Who cares if Safeway knows that I'm, you know, 60? Have a separate email for all that stuff. Have one email. Email's free. I don't know if you're old enough to know. Even we used to have to pay to get an email address. And yeah,
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It was a big thing. Like we had to pay for long distance and the whole thing. So have a separate email address for just your family and friends. And the doctors, the important things. And have some dummy email address that you give to all the vendors. And you don't worry about that stuff. Now, not that the new one can't be hacked or someone get that, but it's just a simple way of eliminating some possibilities.
Sounds like you are incredibly busy. This has just been such a wealth of information. Can you share more about your unit? How many officers work in your unit and
sure. How
many cases do you handle?
So the financial crimes unit is in the bureau called property crimes. There's persons crimes and property crimes is an easy way to think about it. So in my bureau, which is led by Lieutenant Jeff Hawkins, we have the auto crimes unit, crimes related to auto crimes, burglary, so burglary, theft, vandalism, things like that. The financial crimes unit, we're dedicated to dealing with financially based crimes that occur within the city of Scottsdale. They're not all in Scottsdale, but if they're our victim, our citizen, we're concerned about it. And then we have what they call the repeater offender unit, which is really basically a surveillance and apprehension unit. So I've got 5 professional investigators. I actually have 4 detectives and a civilian professional investigator. And I have a CPA, forensic accountant, who helps put these cases together because it can get wickedly complicated. I mean, we sit there with multiple screens and spreadsheets and trying to figure it all out. We have a saying that if every morning you don't sit down at your desk and go, what in the blankety blank am I looking at? You're not a financial crimes detective because it's changing all the time. The scams are changing, the way it's changing. So that's what we have, and I lead that group. And then what's nice is we're also members of federal task forces. So we're either with the FBI task force, so we're cross-credentialed, or the Secret Service task force, so we're cross-credentialed. If we have a case of mutual concern that's out of state, if the federal people are going to pay for it, we can travel to there to deal with it. We're under the umbrella of being a federal officer. And we can bring it back here. It's busy. We have hundreds and hundreds of open cases. I think the unit has assigned maybe 23,000 cases right now.
Wow.
Now, that's a lot. That's over years. They're not all workable, but we have about 400 cases right now that are workable, but you can only work one at a time. So how do you figure out what to move to the front? Just because there's a large loss doesn't mean it should be the front. We try to work them in the order received because that's the fairest thing to do. If we hit an impasse that we can't go any further, we just tell a citizen we can't do any more. Now, they get upset that we don't travel to California to figure out something.
Sure.
But that's just not the way it works right now.
Are there any cases that you can share with us that are just memorable to you and your work here?
After a while, they all blend together.
I can imagine.
So I'll probably get some of this wrong. I was just talking to the bank folks about this one that I was involved with in 2006 when I was just a detective. But it was my first undercover financial crimes based. And basically, someone was advertising in a newspaper CD rates. A CD is a certificate of deposit. So you put in a particular length of time, you're going to get this particular interest rate. CDs only go through banks, federally insured, regulated, and they're insured by the FDIC, up to $250,000. Someone was advertising in the paper that they were doing CDs, but they weren't a bank. So we started looking into it. We actually had a victim of it, and it happened to be a Scottsdale-based business because they rented out a little space to do their scam. And we went in and we talked to them in undercover capacity. And because, you know, being a former banker, I was like, oh, this is beautiful. Are you a bank? Well, we work with a bank and we're FDIC insured. And I talked about investing my $800,000 of my grandfather's money, and they were very excited. And kind of said, okay, I'll call you back. Ended up a total scam. We recovered $1.3 million from them. We arrested three people.
Wow.
And they each got like 2 years. You think it'd be a lot more. But we recovered $1.3 million for members of our community. The recovery rate, the big thing is the giveaway, is we rarely get money back now because it's gone. It's in cryptocurrency. Or it's gone into a bank account of another victim, another victim, another victim, and it's left the country. It's in China. It's wired out immediately. They're smart as moving it out as soon as they can. So that was kind of a foundational case for me of,
Sure. Wow,
we can make a difference. And that's what we want, resolution for our community if we can get it. To say, we've done everything we can, and here's what happened. And everybody wants the end of the story. They want to be able to put a period at the end of their crisis or their chaos so they can move on with their life. That's what we want to provide. Ultimately, we're cops. We want to put people in jail who are doing wrong. It doesn't happen that often in financial crimes anymore. And that's a tragedy.
Well, we've covered a lot of information. What is one thing you wish every senior or their family members knew about financial scams?
Every time you get an email, every time you get a text, every time you get a call, every time you get a piece of paper in the mail, it's like they're knocking at your door. They're knocking at your window. They want to be let in. And you have to click on something to let them in. So stop the click, stop the loss. It goes a long way. Independently verify. Don't trust any of those things. And that knock and the click sounds like you are unlocking a lock on your front door. Don't do that. Stop the click, stop the loss.
Sergeant, thank you so much for joining us and shedding some light on this. It really is a critical issue. And as I mentioned earlier, knowledge is power. And with the right information and the resources, we can all play a role. Like you said, that community piece is so important. So we appreciate that you took the time to be there with us today to talk about this.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. If you suspect a scam or have concerns about potential fraud, don't wait. Contact the Scottsdale Police Department and report it. You can also find scam prevention tips and resources through organizations like AARP's Fraud Watch Network and the Arizona Attorney General's Office.
And remember, if something feels off, it probably is. Trust your instincts and don't be afraid to ask for help. For more episodes, find us on YouTube by searching Podsdale or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening and stay safe out there. That's all for this episode of Podsdale. If you enjoyed listening, be sure to subscribe. You can find us on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app. Share episode ideas and provide your feedback by emailing communications@scottsdaleaz.gov. Thanks for listening.